Hey everyone, this is episode 242 of the Voluntary Viewing Podcast, recorded Monday, January 22nd. We're trying to figure out if Scooby-Doo has ever popped a gat, or if guns even exist in this universe.
So, Scooby-Doo, where are you? There's a character named Beauregard Sanders.
Yeah.
From the episode, A Night of Fright is No Delight.
Because Scooby had to spend a night in the Confederate Manor in order to get the inheritance.
Okay. I feel like I remember that. Yeah. The Colonel's lawyers, Creeps and Crawls, I remember that, tried to scare their potential inheritors away during the night by dressing up as phantom shadows. They were able to catch the so-called phantoms, revealing that their hoax was for nothing, as the $1 million was worthless Confederate money. Okay. So, the episode is called SD Way, A Night of Fright is No Delight, and Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? I think is on HBO Max.
Okay.
Let's, because I have a Max subscription. We're getting on this. Oh, no, it's on Prime. Weird.
Huh.
Yeah, I thought for sure that was Warner Brothers. Maybe they don't care.
No, original Scooby-Doo is weird because that was originally produced by CBS.
Barbera, right?
Yeah. Well, contracted through CBS.
Got it. Okay. I got to sign into my Prime account.
I am watching what I think is the clip from that episode. I'll put the YouTube link in the chat. I'm not convinced that there's guns here. I know that they shoot at the ghost with like the corks of wine bottles.
Oh, wait a minute here. Uh-oh.
I could have sworn that was a Civil War musket.
Wow, you!
Oh yeah, no. This is the one where they like have the spring-loaded ironing board, and they launch Scooby into the washing machine.
Wait, is it Scooby-Doo? Where are you? Or is it What's New Scooby-Doo?
This is Scooby-Doo. Where are you?
Okay, it's the original, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking for A Night of Fright is No Delight on Amazon Prime. I found it.
Yeah, they're flying around on the washing machine with wings,
like you do.
Yeah, and then they catch the ghosts on the clothesline. No guns.
No,
yeah,
okay.
And then there's the fake Confederate money.
Wow.
That's my bad. I misremembered that one. They just said the thing you say when you fire guns, not firing guns.
That's probably the meme.
No, Scooby does, in fact, not have Big Blam Blam.
Oh, wait. It is on Max. It's so fucking stupid, dude. Amazon has it, but you need a Boomerang subscription in order to watch it.
So, I think almost all of Scooby-Doo is on Max now.
Right, which makes sense. Huh. Well, there you go, guys.
Definitely guns in Mystery Incorporated, though.
Scooby-Doo shooting a gun. I mean, Scooby himself probably doesn't need a gun. Like I said, it just needs to be a gun, even if it's on the table, even if, like, they meet an old man who's got like an old tiny rifle. Something, you know? But we ain't getting that. We ain't finding it. There's no like prospector, you know, who's like got a on the mantle above his fireplace. He's got like a rifle mounted up there or something, you know?
Hold on. I'm trying to find a meme.
Wait, like a meme of Scooby with a gun? I'm sure someone's done that. I think I saw a YouTube video.
Hold on.
There's a guy named Will Williamson.
Okay, here we go. Here we go.
Ah, it's Mystery Incorporated. God damn it, Andrew. There's a lot of guns in Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated.
There is.
Okay.
Come on. Is this Scoob and Shag?
Yes, yeah! It absolutely is. Like, is that a gun? No.
Is this the original? Or?
Yeah, this is before they got weird with it.
Okay. Not weird at all.
No.
Dog eat dog. Interesting. All right. That's a hell of a way to start.
Mm. And the man who thinks that's interesting is Ryan Holtz. Ryan, if you were an NFL team owner, what would you do differently than all other NFL team owners?
I would redefine what rebuilding is.
No. Hey!
But we do want to do that, right? Is that this podcast?
We don't have to lead off with it. We got pod to fill, pod to burn.
We don't have to lead off with it unless you guys want to. Should everyone else be introduced first?
Andrew, what would you do differently if you were an NFL team owner?
Do rebuilding better.
Wow. I would make myself a jersey, okay? That's where I was going with this one. Like, I don't know why. I don't know why all that. You always see him in suits. You always see him in formal wear. No, you are infinitely more human and appealing if you, as an NFL team owner, just like, oh, you made yourself jersey number 100 and you just wear that like whenever you show up to work, whenever you're at a game at the stadium.
I would have mine be my net worth. My number would be my net worth. And there's constantly a seamstress that is changing the numbers out as my net worth goes up and down with the results of the game.
Yeah. If your team loses, you drop a decimal point. That's fun.
Fair. All right. Andrew and Ryan had a fantastic conversation in our Facebook group chat the other day about what a rebuild is, what rebuilding is in the NFL, what constitutes as a rebuild season, if success is a metric in that or not. My inclination going into this conversation is yes. Although maybe the Packers have redefined that as they just had maybe a rebuilding season and did quite well. Although Ryan might take umbrage with that. Let's start with Ryan. What is a rebuild?
So Andrew, I think at one point got it into his head that I felt that a rebuilding season included a team being successful, which I definitely do not. Like, okay. 100% not a thing.
No, actually, I know what you mean by that.
I actually made a fun little Venn diagram last night because I was explaining our discussion. Yeah, I know you can't see I was explaining this to Angel, and I was trying to be like, me and Andrew's definitions of a rebuilding year 100% overlap. Like, there are plenty of teams that fall in the Venn diagram, in the middle of the Venn diagram of mine and Andrew's definitions of a rebuilding year. Mm-hmm. But there, as we have identified, there's definitely outliers on both ends that do not fall in those definitions. And that either of us might consider, although I think my definition's a little bit more inclusive, and then Andrew's just has some teams that I definitely would not call rebuilding in his definition. So, but I'm curious to see how it goes.
Let the listeners know that Andrew has just taken off his robe. He's getting the weighted clothes, the weighted robe to train is coming off. He's unleashing 100% of his power.
I took off my robe and then the static electricity traveled through my headphones and fried my eardrums.
Great.
Yeah.
This is a debate, not an argument. This is a very intellectual thing. We both agree.
Yes, we are thinking
that
men.
It's not real. Like this.
Yeah, it doesn't
this definition
matter.
Is not important, and I want to lay down the ground with that again. I think about at least 75% of quote-unquote rebuilding years both of us would call a rebuilding year, so we definitely agree on most things.
Also, it's not like a tangible thing. It's not like, right, at the beginning of the season, like they sit down and they all say, okay guys, we're rebuilding this year. It's kind of just a thing that it's happening, and like some people may agree on it, some people won't. Like this year, some people on the Packers team and in the Packers like front office said that we were rebuilding. Others said we weren't. Like, it is, I think that I would call this a rebuilding year. I know Lucas said that it was. Ryan, you disagreed.
No, I didn't. I very much agreed.
You also said this was a rebuilding
year. Again, this was a rebuilding year for the Green Bay Packers. So
no,
I never did.
Last night, you said that like not enough changed this year for it to be a...
definition.
You were saying that not enough changed for it to fit my definition.
Yeah,
and
because
I,
your definition
I thought, like,
is so focused on player movement.
Player movement and like coaching staff. And
okay, sure. Then in that case, there was no coaching staff changes. So
right, but like there were tons of fucking changes in the players. Like
no, in the coaching staff. Like if
right,
saying,
no, but you said that there weren't enough. You said there weren't any like changes Like, not there weren't enough changes in
there
the.
Weren't that many changes in the grand
scheme. I think there were plenty.
Main one was Aaron Rodgers, and then it was just.
Well, it was the main one because it's the most important player. Like,
sure,
yeah.
So,
and that's a big deal. Like, a lot of the time, if you change quarterbacks, that's enough to constitute a rebuilding.
So
not always.
We need to establish the definition for Andrew Clark. If you lose or if you change your quarterback, is it automatically a rebuilding season or no? Does there need to be a higher bar? I'm not saying the Packers were that, but let's just say there was a team where literally everything stayed exactly the same except where they have a new quarterback. Is that a rebuilding?
I would say not always, but most of the time. I will say that when Brady joined the Bucs, I do not consider that rebuilding because he literally joined that team because it was built. Tom Brady joined the Buccaneers because that team was built to be, hey, put a quarterback in here and you can win a fucking Super Bowl.
Because Tom Brady's a system QB. gotta get it in there.
Yeah. Right. But I think a lot of the time, like when you have a QB change, like that is a huge like swing for an organization, and that would usually constitute rebuilding, whether it's because you drafted, you know, your quarterback of the future, or you just had like a you know, your long-term quarterback retire, or, you know, fucking whatever. I think most of the time I would consider that rebuilding.
Yeah. I think what we agree on. Oh, sorry. No, Lucas, go.
So it's swapping out of personnel with an unknown ceiling, basically.
Well, so my actual definition of rebuilding is when there is a lot of change within an organization, whether it's players, coaches, or both, that lead to the point of that season not being we are going to compete at the highest level possible, but instead we are going to evaluate and see what we have so that we know what we need for the future.
Yeah.
You know, this year was a rebuilding year for the Packers because, you know, Gutekunst refused basically to sign veterans because he wanted to see what the young guys had to know, hey, who's going to be around here for the long haul and who isn't. Like, we need to get these guys reps and we need to see them so that we know who's good enough to be a stalwart on the Packers next season. And then we go get it. And obviously it worked out a little bit better than we maybe thought even like 3 months ago.
A lot of it better.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the back half of that definition we're in total agreement on. Like, a rebuilding year is a year where like coaching staff, management, everyone is focused more on, yeah, like player evaluation, looking ahead to the future, not really necessarily concerned with the results of this current season. If you win, great, but like that's not the focus. The focus is more on understanding the assets that you have for the future. My difference is, instead of it being about personnel changing and that is what makes it a rebuilding year, it's more about the results of the previous season precipitating this change. So if you had a disappointing season and that made your next season now no longer really as focused on winning that year and more about looking ahead to the future. So the Packers, and the reason I use disappointing and not losing is because the Packers had a decent year last year, but they missed the playoffs and we definitely expected to make the playoffs. So it was a disappointing season and that triggered a rebuilding year where we were more focused on evaluating talent. And sure, changes can absolutely happen, but that's not like what makes it a definition. So our Venn diagram is two circles where the common definition is the focus is not about like winning this season. It's more about player evaluation, looking into the future. But my end is disappointing results from the previous season. And Andrew's end is like major personnel overhaul. That's where I think our Venn diagram sits at. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong, Andrew.
No, I think that is like, that's where you are and that's where I am. And yeah, there's a bunch of instances where both are true. So we can definitely agree on those being rebuilding years.
Like the Packers this year.
Yeah, exactly. I just think that the reason that this was a rebuilding year wasn't because of the results of last season. It's what happened that made this team different than last year.
Why did everything happen the way it happened? If the Green Bay Packers would have won a Super Bowl last year, do you think they would have been rebuilding this year? Or would they have brought a lot more people back and reloaded and continued to try to win more Super Bowls.
Yeah, you're saying that if they would have won the Super Bowl, they wouldn't have rebuilt, but they didn't win the Super Bowl, so they rebuilt. Like, but the but the rebuilding wasn't because of just the results of last year.
It wasn't?
The changes happened because of the results of last year. The rebuilding was because of the changes. The changes happened because of the results of last year. But but the changes had to happen for it
they
to
didn't.
Be a rebuilding year. Yes,
why?
Yes, they did.
Why do they?
Okay, let me ask you this question, Ryan.
Okay.
You've got a restaurant.
Yes. Wait, hold on. I want to throw this out there because I know that I got you more than once in these hypothetical scenarios, and mine were focused on football. You're now pivoting to restaurants, but I'm curious to see where you go with this.
So you've got a restaurant.
Okay.
You've got your staff. You've got your host or hostess. You've got your wait staff. You have your chefs. You've got your bartender. Your restaurant is, you know, decorated in a certain way, and a critic comes in. You get a bad review. Everyone's real sad. And you say, hey, I know we are better than this. We're going to keep doing what we're doing. And, you know, we're not going to change anything. A month goes by. Literally nothing has changed. The menu is the same. The staff is the same. The restaurant looks exactly the same. Nobody is acting any different. A critic comes in, gives them a review. It's outstanding. They liked what they got. Everyone's excited. Nothing changed. Did that restaurant rebuild?
Yeah, in this case, yeah, they absolutely did.
No, they didn't. They didn't. They did not rebuild.
Also,
they did
again,
not
it's
do
not
anything.
One-to-one. They it's did absolutely not one-to-one.
They didn't do anything.
It's not
How
one-to-one.
How can you rebuild something that's already there?
First of all, the concept of being a critic is not like an actual... Like, that is so subjective. There is an objective
it's
measure of success.
It's called an analogy, Ryan.
That's what I'm trying to say, though, is that it's not one-to-one. Do you want to get into some one-to-one examples where I kind of caught you and I'm curious how you address them?
Yeah, sure.
All right. By your own definition, the Detroit Lions were not rebuilding in the year 2022. But you yourself admitted that for the last two seasons before this one, the Lions were rebuilding. I went and looked at the roster. I went and looked at the coaching staff. The only major addition between 2021 and 2022 is Aiden Hutchinson. The entire roster stayed pretty much exactly the same. The entire coaching staff stayed exactly the same.
I thought there was
more changes. But
apparently
that was rebuilding.
I thought there was more
changes. So the Lions were not rebuilding last year, because I would say they were. Like, they were rebuilding.
Like, looking back at it, no, I don't think they were.
That's crazy to me. But you said they were, so I'm just going to throw that out there.
So, in 2021, I think that they were rebuilding. And
definitely,
by the end of that season, they had in place what they wanted to have in place. They built their team. And then going into 2022, the team was built. And that's not rebuilding. The team had been rebuilt previously, and now they were just going and doing their thing.
But a team coming off a 3-13 in one season, the Lions were not trying to win a Super Bowl in 2022. They were evaluating their young players. They were focused on getting reps for these younger players, seeing what they had for the future.
In 2021?
Just in case. No, in 2022.
I don't think so.
What you just said, though, like, you're changing your tune now, but you had said that for 2 years the Lions were rebuilding. And it's because, I agree with you, they were not focused on winning that season. The Detroit Lions, maybe they were lying to themselves, but let's be honest, in 2022, they did not start the season like, we're going to win a whole fucking Super Bowl, you guys. They were like, we got a lot of young talent and we look really promising. Let's see who's got it. Let's see who doesn't. And then next year, 2023, we might have something here. And look what happened. Like, it worked out exactly that way. They didn't even make the playoffs. They went 9-8. They had a pretty successful season by their measures, but
they
did
a
not
lot
make
of
the
really
playoffs.
Close games.
Yeah, absolutely. They didn't make the playoffs. But I don't think that they were upset. I think that they were like, hey, what a promising year. Let's get ready for next year. Same thing as the Packers this year. Definitely rebuilding, both by your definition and mine. Mine more that because we missed the playoffs, we had a disappointing year, so we had to focus more on evaluation this season. And we weren't necessarily like focused rock solid on winning a Super Bowl. And so it was a rebuilding year. But that's the first one where originally you had said that you've changed your tune now that you know that there weren't any personnel changes.
But
I think
what we've established here is that the difference between how you see a rebuilding process or a rebuilding year versus how I see it is that you judge the results and I judge the process.
I don't judge the results of the rebuilding season. I judge right. the results of the season prior.
Right. So, but like, I don't see how any season following a disappointing season is a rebuilding year if they're not doing anything differently.
Because the coach, it's about, like you said, it's about the mindset. It's about what the coaches and executives are doing. Are they making moves to try to win a Super Bowl this year? Or like you said, are they focused on getting reps for young players? Are they focused on like trying to make everyone understand who the people are going to be moving forward to set themselves up better for future success? That's the main definition. I'm just saying what triggers that is a disappointing season the year before where you're now like, ooh, let's lower expectations. Let's not try to win a Super Bowl. Let's make sure that we set ourselves up in the future. And it doesn't have anything necessarily to do with personnel changes. It can't. A lot of times it does. A lot of times there are a lot of changes because, yeah, disappointing seasons, a lot of times teams are like, fuck this, and they nuke everything and blow it all up. And then it's also a part of a rebuild.
So how about this year for the Bucks? Mm-hmm. You know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, not the Milwaukee mm-hmm. Bucks. So Brady, let me make sure I get my timeline like correct here. Brady was still the quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year,
yeah.
Okay, Jesus, that feels like forever ago.
It does.
So last year, Brady's last season as the Bucs quarterback, you know, they go to the playoffs, they lose, Brady retires.
Mm-hmm.
The team is mostly the same this year, other than, you know, you got your quarterback change.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, no one really knows what's going to happen going into the season because nobody's confident in Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
And this, I'm not trying to make a point. I'm trying to see how you like feel about this.
Right.
They have the exact same result basically this year. Yeah. This in season was pretty shaky. They still got to the playoffs. They won a playoff game. They lost, to the Lions. And like looking back at the season, would you consider that a rebuilding year for the Buccaneers? Because last season was not disappointing.
So here's
where
we differ.
This season was obviously like the expectations were different.
We might have found another differentiating point here. A rebuilding season is not defined after the conclusion of the season. A rebuilding season is defined at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. So the results of that season do not matter. The rebuilding season is defined in September. It is defined by the objectives of the front office and the coaches at the beginning of the year. And then, yeah, you could greatly defy expectations, which is why I threw the Rams 1999 year out there as the best rebuild ever, because they were, at the beginning of the season, not expecting to win a Super Bowl. They had a lot of young players that they were evaluating, seeing what they had, and turns out they had a lot, and they won the Super Bowl as the greatest show on turf, one of the best teams ever, won everything. That's, to me, a rebuild. So, yeah, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 100%, were rebuilding this year. And
even,
then they did better than expectations.
Even though last season was not a disappointing season.
It was a disappointing season. They wanted to win a Super Bowl, 100%.
So, rebuilding is just, you know, if you don't have high expectations at the beginning of the season?
Yeah, high expectations and the approach of the front office and the coaches, like which we agree on, is that they're more focused on evaluating young players. And the reason for me that precipitates that is that they've kind of got a reality check of like, okay, no, we were not going to win a Super Bowl last year, and we probably need to think about like, let's maybe win a Super Bowl in 2024 or 2025. And this, for the time being, we're going to focus on our young guys.
But again, I would still not consider last season for the Bucks to be disappointing. And I would definitely say that they were rebuilding this year because of going into the season, they didn't know what they had and they had to figure that out.
Right. But yeah, so you agree, but again, right? you said the main thing that changed. Well, again, we do agree that the Buccaneers were rebuilding. But again, you're saying the only thing that really changed was the quarterback. And previously you had said that that doesn't necessarily mean it's enough.
Not necessarily, not always, but most of the time is what I said.
Okay.
Like,
because that's a not much change. That's like,
there were
like
also some changes on the offensive line. Some veterans like retired and left and shit like that.
Sure.
But
I think I stand by that. I think sometimes, you know, bringing a discussion to the extremes is where you can find the core discrepancies. And I think my example, which I could just read verbatim, and there's no audience, there's not necessarily anyone that's going to judge this, but I really do think that I am in the majority with my example in saying that this example is not rebuilding. So a 12-5 team wins the Super Bowl. Their legendary quarterback head coaching duo ride off into the sunset. The head coach's young OC takes over the team and immediately hits the ground running by signing a big shot quarterback by some miracle of a contract dispute, was on the open market, like Peyton Manning back in 2013 with the Broncos. They then draft a couple of receivers, make a couple big edge rusher signings and free agency, like they're going all in. They want to win a Super Bowl. And then they do it. They go 12-5 once again, win another Super Bowl. Like, to me, that is just not rebuilding. 100%. In no way is that rebuilding. But there's a ton of changes. There's so much personnel changes.
They completely rebuilt the team. It is a completely different team at that point.
That's fair, but the rebuild did not happen in the season. The rebuild definitely happened in the offseason. You cannot call that a rebuilding season.
I didn't say that. I never said that rebuilding is something that just happens inside of the season. I think I almost entirely said that it's stuff that you do before the season starts to see who you've got.
Well, but how can you see who you've got until you start playing football? Until you start actually playing games, you can't evaluate talent.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Right, so that's where rebuilding season comes into play. But if you get a bunch of established talent, like in the offseason...
So that wasn't a rebuilding season, it was just a rebuilding offseason.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. No, genuinely.
If the team is rebuilt in the offseason, I'll concede that maybe a few of the letters of that sentence should be different. That it wasn't a rebuilding season, that it was a rebuilt season.
That is, yeah, absolutely.
Fine,
that is a difference.
I guess. I think that the semantics there are pretty astronomical.
This all came from you not thinking that the 1999 St. Louis Rams were a rebuild because you were like, not that much changed between the year they went 4-12.
I didn't know anything about that, like that team. I said
yeah,
that if
talked th- about it,
what I said was that if they had like 9 losing seasons in a row, they were probably rebuilding for a really long time.
Yeah, they were.
And I don't think that you should just say that was the rebuilding year.
They were all rebuilding years. By my definition, all 9 of those years were rebuilding years. They were like not in win now mode, all 9 of those seasons. And therefore, they were in a rebuilding season for a long fucking time. Lions fans have been saying that all like during this entire postseason run is like my entire life we were rebuilding. And now we are finally in the like compete phase. And it's been 30 years. Like,
so then if you're bad for a really long time, the first year that you're good, that's the rebuilding year. Cause this is not a rebuilding year for the Lions. Like,
no,
it's not. Yeah,
definitely not. No, that's what I'm saying. When you're good for the first year, that's not the rebuilding year. All the years where the previous year was disappointing and you're not necessarily trying to win a Super Bowl, those are all rebuilding years. Sometimes that can be like the Lions, 30 years straight of rebuilding.
But again, you also just said a few minutes ago that the Buccaneers this year were rebuilding because, I mean, which I also agree they were rebuilding, but you said it was because they didn't meet their expectations because they didn't win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That
expectations
is what,
vary. Yeah.
Right. So were the Packers rebuilding all those years that Aaron Rodgers couldn't get it done in the playoffs?
No, I don't think the Packers genuinely were trying to win a Super Bowl. The Packers were not all in. We talk about that a lot.
We were trying to win a Super Bowl those fucking years.
Yeah,
we
talk about that a fucking lot, about how we kept drafting random defensive players instead of desperately addressing our core area of need, and that Aaron Rodgers literally fell out with the franchise because we were not going all in like the Rams were. Like, that's talked about a lot, is that we were not all in Super Bowl or bust this year. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers knew this is probably it for Tom Brady. Like, let's be honest. It's Super Bowl or bust. There is no point if we don't win a Super Bowl this year. Like, what are we doing here? And that's the difference. So then they fell short. Coaches were reevaluating this whole season for the Buccaneers. And yeah, they defied expectations and managed to make the playoffs. Barely, like by some tiebreakers and shit, and then won a playoff game because the Eagles are historically like just completely fell apart.
What a fucking disaster class.
So I don't think it's as impressive. But anyway, yeah, Lucas.
Can I pose a couple questions that might alleviate this or reframe it?
Do it.
Yeah.
Can a rebuild season be triggered not by a disappointing season, but by personnel having to be let go, having to be swapped out because of contracts ending.
No, that's what Andrew's definition
yeah,
is.
That's what I'm
saying. You just summed up the argument for me. No, for Andrew, yes, in the alternate direction. Like, you flip the question and Andrew would say no. Like, Andrew, if you asked Andrew, can a rebuild not just be from personnel changes year to year, but triggered by a bad season? Andrew would say no. So you summed up the argument to where I would say no, the way you framed the question. If you flipped it, Andrew would say no. And that's where the core disagreement comes from. So it's tricky. No, absolutely.
Okay. I'm just trying to figure out like what question to ask in tied to this podcast release to get our audience to engage with it.
Sound off in the comments below if you like name your favorite rebuilding year for your sports team.
And then kind of the question tied to this now, after the Packers performance, and I guess to a lesser extent, depending on who you ask, the Buccaneers performance, is a rebuild no longer an excuse for being bad? Like, do fans not get that Kwanzai anymore of, well, yeah, we were bad, but it's a rebuilding year. You're
it
not
depends.
Supposed to be.
Yeah. I
100%.
Mean, yeah, I mean, kind of depends on the extent of the rebuild. I mean,
right.
Especially given my definition, like sometimes you have rebuilds that are like barely rebuilds and they're mostly just excuses to like not spend money on the team.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, and we like, just want to see what this random fourth round rookie quarterback has to know if he's the guy in the future, which he never is.
Right. The 0-16 Browns following up the following season, I don't remember what they went, maybe like 3-13.
No, they won one game. Oh no, that was they won one game the previous year.
Yeah,
and then they
went 0-16. Yeah. So they went like 1-31 in 2 years. I think the season following they won like three games. I think if you ask some Browns fans, they'd be somewhat happy with 3-13. Like if you asked a Packer fan this year if we would be happy with 3-13, I don't think you get a single person who would be happy with that result. So it depends. It depends on expectations, as always. And yeah, no, like I think also like Andrew said, it can depend on like how much genuinely changed. Like if the Buccaneers, like I don't even know, like Lamar Jackson had some contract issues and I don't even remember if he would have been available this offseason. Was that what it was, Andrew? Like he'd be available to go to a different team for the 23-24 season?
No, it would have been last year. So last offseason, his contract expired.
Okay.
And then he got transition tagged.
Okay, so for argumentative sake, that's kind of bad.
And then he got his extension.
Set up for it.
So.
Yeah, the system's not set up for it. I guess we'd need, like, the Chiefs, and the Chiefs murdered Patrick Mahomes' wife, and he's like, I can't play for this organization anymore, and the NFL granted him special exemption, and he became a free agent, effective immediately, and the Buccaneers made him a great offer, and they signed Patrick Mahomes, and they immediately won a Super Bowl, like... Yeah, I mean, that'd probably be Super Bowl or bust for a lot of Buccaneers. And it's because, you know, they took one elite quarterback and traded him out for an even more elite quarterback and nothing else really changed. And so expectations, if they then went 7-9 or 7-10, even though it was a quote unquote rebuilding year, like, I don't think people would be very fucking happy with Patrick Mahomes plugged into that roster going 7-10. So, yeah. I mean, it's all expectations. It's the reason that I don't watch fucking movie trailers or like any really like read anything about new outcoming media is because, dude, expectations are so important for the human experience. It's kind of terrifying. Like,
yeah,
knowing what to expect going into something taints your opinion of the outcome in such an insane way that like I don't know if it's been studied a lot psychologically, but the second I stopped doing that, I've started enjoying media so much more.
I agree with that. And like, dang, this to a media thing, a thing I can speak about a little more than football. yeah, that expectation thing also coupled with the fact that due to various capitalistic mechanisms and quite frankly, it being a lot easier and socially more acceptable for outlets just to kind of buy positive opinion from influential people. I feel like we don't hear... Things aren't bad. Things aren't allowed to be bad anymore in a way that is and kind of frustrating to me, kind of numbing to me.
It's rare, but it does happen. Morbius.
Right, right.
It's Morbin time. It does happen. Morbius. It's just, it's pretty rare.
Morbius people gave shit. The new Suicide Squad game, like even the people who have made a career out of like being soft on releases are like, oh wow, this is advanced bad.
Yeah. I think there's just so many mixed opinions on things now where like I'll see two people that, you know, consume the same piece of media and they have like completely opposite reactions. And it's not like why, you know, things aren't allowed to be bad, but they're also not allowed to be like any degree between bad and good.
Nah.
They have to be one or the other. And like, yeah, maybe I saw a movie and I thought it was just okay. And the person that I talked to loved it and they thought it was fucking fantastic. Those should be two valid opinions. But when one person sees it and they says it's the greatest movie of all time, and the other person sees it and says that it is complete dog shit and the worst thing they've ever seen, that neither of those opinions can be true. Like there's something else going on there. Like, one
this is very Blade Runner 2049.
I know, Ryan. I was trying to avoid it. But like, yeah, like things should be able to be like just okay or like pretty bad, but like could be worse or no. Yeah, it's fine. But like, I don't get that anymore.
Yeah. The reason I stopped doing it entirely is because I just noticed that I wasn't liking things as much as a lot of my coworkers were. And it's because I was getting a lot of recommendations from my coworkers for things to watch. And they talk about how much they liked it. And then I'd amp up my expectations and I'd go in and be like, eh, it's fine. It does okay. It's not the greatest thing ever made. And when I go in blind to something with zero expectations whatsoever, like I like it a lot. Usually like, it's like, ah, I'm pleasantly surprised. Going into Saltburn with literally no idea what the fuck. I didn't even know what the movie was about. I didn't read a log line.
Like, it was like, a fun movie about college hijinks.
Yeah, I mean, if you trust some sources. But even that would fuck you up. Like, what if you really expected like a college romp and you didn't get that? You'd be fucked up. Like, you'd probably not like the movie as much. So having zero expectations, like literally not even knowing what it's about and just hearing, go watch it, That's the best way to do stuff, in my opinion. Like, if something is recommended to you by someone whose opinion you respect and you just do it with zero knowledge whatsoever before the fact, you're way more likely to be like pleasantly surprised of just like, yeah, they did do this thing really well. I didn't know much about Asteroid City. Like I stayed away from it almost entirely. And Lucas, you just really liked it. So as soon as I got a chance to watch it on streaming, I watched it, didn't even really know most of the actors who were in it. I assumed there would be plenty of Wes Anderson regulars and stuff like that. Had no knowledge of the plot. I had heard one thing against my will about like a play. So I knew that there was maybe like a story element of like, it's a play. That's it.
Yeah.
And then I loved it. I was blown away. I was like, this is so good. I had so much fun. The characters were amazing. Like Wes Anderson, I understand, like now revisiting the criticism from the past, I understand people saying it's Wes Anderson trying too hard to make a Wes Anderson movie, but I liked that. Like, that made it fun for me. So I don't know. I'd recommend it. If nothing else, just try it. Like if you hear good things about a movie, but you don't really know anything about it, just try not researching and just going and seeing what happens. And I bet you you'll be pleasantly surprised and you'll be a convert.
Ryan, I think that has to be my approach to the recent beta release of Pal World.
I just saw a TikTok on this like an hour ago.
Because I'm just seeing every fucking opinion about... If y'all listening to this don't know, Pal World had a trailer a while ago. That led to people referring to it as Pokemon, but with guns. Because that's what the trailer made it seem. There are critters with guns or that you use as ammo in this game.
Just as ammo.
It doesn't play like a Pokemon game. It's a lot more of a resource management, like kind of a Minecraft, like community building, but you know, more focus on the violence, more focus on the critters, more focus on the like creating like
it's what Pokemon should be.
Is it made by the guys who did Ark? Or is it just like running on the same engine? Like I know that it's It's got ties to ARK, right? The survival, whatever it's called.
Yeah, ARK. Survival Evolved, right?
Yeah, Survival Evolved, something like that.
Actually, ARK Survival Evolved is probably like the best point of comparison. Yeah. Thank you.
So it seems like that. It seems like ARK Survival Evolved, but with Pokemon and like a little more like cartoony, like a little bit more like, you shoot the fluffy ball and it explodes. Like,
right.
You load it into your rocket launcher. And he stares at you with sad eyes. Then you launch it into a structure, destroying it. Oh, so weird.
So I think Pal World is built in Unreal. I don't know if there's any overlap with ARK. Let me research that.
Maybe it's the same developers. I saw
some people saying that the games were just wildly similar. I don't know if there's any like developer overlap.
It might just share DNA more than anything.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The reason it's making headlines now after release, on top of it being a very like SEO friendly concept, there are accusations that the developers just blatantly ripped off Pokemon designs for this game. And they did. Whether or not that triggers a lawsuit, whether or not they are right to do that, is being decided in the discourse right now. But no one's arguing that they didn't we got Pokemon at home Pokemon and put them in our game and make them kill each other with guns.
So yeah, it's just according to the CEO, because everyone's like, dude, you're ripping off Pokemon. Then the CEO said that they didn't even use Pokemon as one of the main inspirations. And instead, the concept is based on ARK Survival Evolved. The survival mechanics are based on Rust. And then Dragon Quest influenced the creature designs. And it's like, I don't...
These
assets are clearly Pokemon. Like, I don't know what... This, and it's apparently the same company that did Craftopia, right? Which was Breath of the Wild. So...
Yeah, that was one of the Breath of the Wild clones.
So, look... This happens in gaming. Like, you can just blatantly steal shit and get away with it if the game is good. So we'll see if it's good. I mean, it's still early access. Who knows if it'll ever actually get a final release, but yeah.
Yeah, not like the day before that fucking shit show nightmare of a scam game. That was like the most anticipated game on Steam for a while. And it was a fucking scam. It wasn't real. It was so funny. Those servers just shut down today. It was like, it existed for like 5 days and then shut down. And the beta people that had keys like were still able to technically play it for a few weeks. And then it is like now gone for good.
Yeah. Video games, one of the most ephemeral media.
Anything can happen, baby. There was that one, kind of the OG Battle Royale, I feel like, was, what was that game called?
H1Z1.
Well, right? Yeah, H1Z1, but that was a mod on...
DayZ?
DayZ. No, no, DayZ was the mod, right?
DayZ was a mod of Arma.
That's what it is. Yeah, that came from Arma. It wasn't the standalone game. It was that Funhouse did a video on it, so then I bought it. And then they had to like re-release it a couple of times, but it's just like spears and shit for most of the game. Day one in my head.
I almost want to say the finals, but that's a different game that just came out.
No, yeah, that one's controversial because it used AI voice acting.
Okay, so we've got a list of Battle Royale games, which I like. The Culling.
The Culling. Oh! Yeah, like, so yeah, the thing with it was the Culling 2 is they made the sequel and it was the one that only existed for a few days and then they had to refund everybody.
This is actually a fascinating Wikipedia article because it has, list of Battle Royale games. Like, clearly they all came from, DayZ, H1Z1, which was just an Arma mod, and that became really popular. They list the first one as Z1 Battle Royale, which was released as early access standalone. Mm-hmm. In January of 2015, and then The Culling came out in March of 2016, PUBG came out in March of 2017, Fortnite Battle Royale in July of 2017. So all these games are just iterations of like this thing, and now it's such a major like genre of video games. It's kind of crazy. Like Apex Legends wasn't until February of 2019, and it is now one of the biggest. I don't know.
Hey, so like, not to put my gamer cred on the line here, do any of you guys know what fucking Vampire the Masquerade is?
No.
Okay.
If you I don't think I do.
I kind of do, but not really. I thought I get it confused because there's Vampire the Masquerade. There's is it called Vampire the Survivors? And then there's one that's called Redfall, which is something else. But one of those games is a vampire battle royale. And one is a single player story based game.
I'm seeing Vampire the Masquerade as a tabletop RPG, but that's probably not.
Okay, the video games take place in the universe, or okay. Vampire the Masquerade is apparently a whole multimedia franchise. That has a dedicated fan base because I keep hearing about it, but never see it out in the wild. They have a battle royale. Also, according to this Wikipedia page, no new battle royales in 2022 or 2023.
Yeah, I did notice that it like very ostentatiously stopped updating at the end of 2021. And I'm like, I don't think that's right. I feel like they just stopped updating this page. But
Vampire the Masquerade Blood Hunt is the battle royale, which is based on the tabletop video game Vampire the Masquerade, which is also then like has spawned other video games.
We could update this page. Newest battle royale games. I mean, like, so example, they have Call of Duty Warzone. What do they call it now, Andrew? Is it still Call of Duty Warzone? I thought it had a new name now.
It's Warzone 2.0.
There you go. Warzone 2.0, when did that come out? I feel like that's a thing.
But then, like, so does it have to be it's like the entire game is just a battle royale? Because remember, COD had a battle royale game mode as part of Black
Ops 4. I think that's in here. Okay. I think that's in here because I saw Warzone, and what was it called again? Blackout.
Yeah.
They have it on the list. So yeah, I think it could be a game mode of them as long as it's like fully fleshed out and actually has like a user base. I just want to see where there's got to be something that released in 2023 and 2024, right?
Yeah, when did Blood Hunt come out?
Oh, wait, did it actually? I don't know.
Oh, no, it came out in 2021. Oh, my God.
Top of Google Darwin result, Project. 2023 Battle Royale games, Off the Grid, Dead Side Club, Deceive Inc., Grit, Prison City.
Whoa.
The Finals came out in 2023.
That's not a Battle Royale. That's just a shooter.
Oh.
I don't even know what The Finals is. I've never heard of it. Do they not have a Battle Royale game mode?
No, it's like one game mode.
What's Farlight 84? Fun. When did that come out? You guys familiar? Farlight 84. Farlight 84 released in 2023. Boom. There you go. Shooter game in a wasteland setting developed using Unreal 4.
This subset of Wikipedia admins, Wikipedia contributors, slacking.
Yeah, Farlight 84, dudes. Clearly
the superior.
Royale. I've never played it. Honestly, they all had moments for me, but I think I'm good.
Yeah.
Is that just me? Maybe it's just that we struggled so much in Warzone before we quit, Andrew, but like every major Battle Royale game, including Apex Legends, had like brief moments for me, some of them less brief than others, but I think I'm good now. Like, yeah. I don't need more.
I mean, I don't know if it feels like Warzone is easier now than it used to be, or just like the competition has gone somewhere else. But yeah, it feels more of like just a way to kill some time. It doesn't like it's not exciting. Like I like routinely, at the point when I was playing like Warzone a little bit more frequently over the last few weeks, I got like half a dozen solo wins. And I just, when I won, I went, ooh, Like, when we won our first fucking Fortnite game, we went bonkers.
Do you remember, Andrew, because I was like a somewhat early adopter of PUBG.
PUBG, I remember.
You would come over in college.
I was we would take shaking. Turns. Like, yeah, when I won that first game of PUBG, I was fucking shaking and sweating. Like, I couldn't calm down for a really long time.
I still
you don't,
have
you don't
it.
Get that anymore.
I still have it recorded on my PC. I was recently looking for a video file for my brother and sister, and I was sorting by largest file size, and I was like, what is this? And then I saw the silent UMP, and you were just prone in the middle of the desert, just like crawling, and then you heard some gunshots above your head, so you like stand up and just spray the fuck out of this last guy. And you have like a sliver of health left, but he dies and it says winner, winner, chicken dinner. And the mouse just like starts fucking freaking out. And I was just like, I remember this. Like Andrew would literally come over to my apartment and we would just take turns playing PUBG because we had no way to do it multiplayer because I was the only person with a gaming PC. And that was fucking great. And then Fortnite came out and like everyone got it. You know, it became like a game for all of your friends. And it wasn't just like a for PC gamer type thing, and we had a lot of fun with that. And then Warzone came out right as COVID hit, and it was like, holy shit, this is perfect. This is
what we do now.
This is, like PUBG was buggy as fuck and like kind of awkward to play. Fortnite was way too cartoony and wasn't as like shootery. It had a lot of building elements. Warzone was like, this is a polished like triple A fucking battle royale game, and it was perfect, and it came out at the perfect time, and we played the fuck out of it, and now I'm good. And there were points during COVID where like someone was like, dude, you gotta get on Apex Legends, it's so good. And I would like download it and played some fun game.
Who's that?
Some that weren't guys from high school and everything like that. And I played like a few games that were pretty fun. Oh, did you? Oh yeah, Andrew, you did get into Apex.
No, and Lucas. Lucas and I played together a lot. Yeah,
that's fair. I didn't play too much with you guys, I remember. But yeah, and it was fun and we had a good time. But now I don't know. I think we're good, right? I don't need it in my life. Like I'm not like, man, if they just fix this thing and this thing, I'd be sucked right back in where this would be like most of my time.
It's Which is why not... Foam Stars is just enough of a change to the formula to get us hooked for $0.
It's what we need.
I've been getting a lot of Battlefield 1 content recommended to me, so I'm still... I got a Battlefield 1 hook in my heart, I think. I'm watching people with the Martini Henry, Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that fucking gun? What the fuck?
Yeah, it's just a one-hit kill.
Like... Yeah. And if they've taken, like, any damage, one-hit kill on any part of the body, and it's an iron sight weapon. I was like, holy shit. This is awesome. I want to do this, knowing I won't be nearly as good with it, but yeah. Foam Stars. What's that about, Lucas? Elevator pitch. I almost said helicopter pitch.
Helicopter.
I don't know.
The helicopter pitch is you have to sell me on this, and if you don't, I push you out of the helicopter.
Why would you shoot a man before throwing him out of a helicopter?
So Foam Star seems to mechanically be very similar to the video game Splatoon, where you are more marking territory, but also able to temporarily kill other players. Pretty much.
Can you choose the color? Can you choose yellow?
I think you will be able to choose the color.
Ooh.
I
feel like yellow and white would be very popular colors for somewhat obvious reasons.
But then instead of, you know, this taking place in a dystopian, weird universe where squids are kids, you're playing as influencers competing in a Mr. Beast-style competition in not Las Vegas.
There you go.
What is a Mr. Beast-style competition?
You fucking know. It's a
Is Apex Legends a Mr. Beast-style competition?
Kinda.
Is any game show a Mr. Beast style competition?
Well, how
Survivor,
like,
this Mr. Beast style
Mr.
competition.
Beast style competition. Deal or No Deal Island.
Like what level of like lack of self-respect is there? You know?
That's what the defining characteristic
is. Yeah. Squid Game's the challenge is the ultimate lack of self-respect challenge. Yeah.
There you go.
Nah.
Interesting. Have you guys seen any of the recent Fortnite memes with like, because you can sing now? like your emote can be like playing musical instruments and like singing, and you can like get a band together by like assigning all of your squad different instruments and stuff and like do a concert in the middle of a Fortnite game. Is that just me?
I have not seen that.
I've seen Peter Griffin in Fortnite. Yeah.
So he's people jacked. People have abused, he is jacked, yes. People have abused this mechanic because they put Mr. Brightside into the game. And you think, that's fine, right? Like, that's a very popular song. It makes sense they'd license that, and that would be one of the main songs that you can play. It's rock, you know, there's a lot of instruments and everything. What they do is they divide the vocals up into parts. So you select them like an emote, and then you can, like, if you sing them correctly, it'll play perfectly in line, and then you can have someone on the guitar, someone on the drums, everything like that. I saw a troll where they downed a guy, and him and all of his squad mates ran up to the downed guy, because in Fortnite you don't really have self revives in the same way. I think they recently introduced them, but like,
yeah,
not really a thing. It's more like you could torture someone who's downed and they have no way out, basically. And they also have the shaker bottle now, where you can like spray champagne on all your friends, but it looks a little sus. Like you're like shaking it up and then just like dousing all your friends with liquid. So if that guy starts shaking, and then the guy selects the lyric for the start of Mr. Brightside. Do you know the lyrics, the first two words of Mr. Brightside by any chance, Lucas?
I'm coming.
Yeah.
So they just did it over and over. It's like, I'm coming.
Just canceling. And then another guy also had another song, which I don't even know what it is, but it starts with like a grunt. So it's literally just, I'm coming. And it's just a guy spraying shit. I'm coming. Spray. Like, and I'm just like, this is a child's game. This is made for babies. And this is what these assumedly at least like 16-year-olds are just roaming around the Fortnite landscape doing to people.
Cyber bullying people.
Yeah, just sexually assaulting people, essentially, in a video game. It's, yeah, it's really something, man. The creativity of this generation. I don't know who came up with that, but yeah, when I was like, oh, Mr. Brightside, that's fun. And I think I scrolled 3 TikToks down and found that one. It was like, I didn't think that through, and neither did the Fortnite devs to make that the top of one of the vocal tracks. So,
oh God, I made the mistake of going onto the Fortnite wiki. Fortnite has lore now.
Yeah, it's always had lore.
But it's bad lore. Like, there was an organization.
Yeah, it's always been bad lore. What?
Yeah, there's like time travel and dimension shit and superheroes.
Fortnite wasn't Battle Royale. Fortnite was like, it wasn't a PvE, like, right, base, yeah, building, like, shit. So originally it had, yeah, like, an actual lore story and everything. And then the Battle Royale has its own lore that stemmed from that and branched outwards to, yeah, where it's now pretty insane. Like,
apparently there was an organization in Fortnite just called The Society.
There you go.
And its members include Valeria, Montague, Oscar, who is a cat man, Peter Griffin, and Solid Snake.
Solid Snake is in Fortnite?
Solid Snake is in Fortnite.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't see you ripping on Kojima for that one.
It's getting to shitpost territory, right? Where, like, if you were to show me a picture of 5 random characters and tell me, yeah, and they're all in Fortnite, I'd be like, okay.
I mean, Nicki Minaj and Homelander are in Warzone. Not a character that Nicki Minaj plays. Nicki Minaj.
Yeah. Well, Nicki Minaj has, I don't think she's ever like done any acting. Like, I think she's just Nicki Minaj. There's no characters
I'm
there.
Nicki.
Is Peely in the lore, or is he just?
I just went to Peely's page.
Yeah, me too.
Peely has a lore section on his page. Peely is literally a banana with human arms and human legs.
Great lore.
Season 8.
Is widowly? Whittle me a banana. With arms and legs.
Season 8, Peely goes through the ripening ritual.
Entering his
bananahood, he meets Jonesy the First, and the two become best friends.
That's lore.
Season 9, after escaping from the volcano eruption with Jonesy by hiding in a bunker, the duo notice there's no food left in the bunker. Bunker Jonesy! Different than Jonesy, I guess.
Very different.
Turns him into a smoothie to sustain himself, keeping both him and Peely alive.
I think I remember seeing that. And so the lore, I think, is just what happens in the trailers for the new season. I saw that on a commercial. I remember, because I'm like, oh, there's a guy in a bunker with a banana and he drinks him up.
Peely. Okay. So they have reactive skins on Fortnite, apparently, where like throughout the match, they can change as the match goes on. So Peely starts the match as like a brighter green, like unripened banana. And by the end of the match, he's got like brown spots and is like gone bad. So that's fun. They also have this promotional image of like a bunch of different Peely alts, which I'm just going to send you a link, because I think one of them, I guess he's wearing swim trunks, so not as inappropriate, but it is a little weird, the implications of these various skins, I would say, if you open the Zoom chat.
So one of the latest lore entries is that there is a young banana born. I'm not seeing genitals on Peely. How do we think Peely reproduces?
Well, that's what I was saying. If you look at that image, there's a Peely without the peel.
Yeah.
And he's still alive, I'm assuming. Like if you did a version of that skin with a human, it would be a horrifying muscle blood monster.
Right.
So I guess those are clothes? The peel is clothes? Is that what that's implying?
I mean, he is a banana. I don't think that there are further implications we need to dive into here.
I think you do, Andrew.
I don't think Peely reproduces. A banana doesn't reproduce. A banana tree makes bananas.
From clippings. Because all bananas that we eat are genetically identical. They're all trimmings from other banana plants, which is why they're unbelievably vulnerable to
strain. If there is a banana disease, we could lose every banana.
And that's why banana candy doesn't taste the same as bananas, is because banana candy was invented before we reached modern banana status, and they taste like the old bananas that we used to eat.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's kind of fascinating because it's from like the 20s and shit, when we had real bananas that weren't just all one super sweet, like, specific banana.
Isn't there that rare blue banana, though, that people says tastes like ice cream that I'd like just have a hard time believing?
I'm not saying it's the only strain. Yeah. It's the only mass-produced strain. How about?
Yeah.
Okay. Guys, I think I found an inconsistency in Peely's lore.
Okay.
Yeah.
So apparently it is a canonical fact that Peely has banana claws.
Okay.
Similar to Wolverine's.
Okay.
But like bananas come out of his hands?
Yes.
Okay.
However, those are made out of banana, and in the undead skin, it is clearly shown that Peely has a skeleton.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's so many implications here.
There should be regular bones coming out of there, Peely.
It's like the implication of Frankenstein in Rick and Morty going to the afterlife with still all of the pieces of different people attached to him, but the other monsters are the human versions of themselves.
Right.
It's like, I really wish we had enough time to stay here and talk about the implications of Frankenstein still being all of his pieces in one guy.
Do you have a new soul? Did we make a new soul when you got stitched together? What's going on?
Souls aren't real, Lucas.
No.
Frankenstein's monster. Very real. Souls? Come on, man. Grow up.
We're getting on in this one, so we don't have to talk about the drama that is OhioCon. Just go read that article on Anime News Network. It is fantastically written, and also the exact blend of drama, the exact perfect blend of drama that I never thought I would see between anime drama, otaku drama, people being petty in that way, and Midwest drama and people being petty in that way.
The roller coaster ride I just went on, because I was off the page looking at something else when you said the word OhioCon.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's a con about Ohio. That's fucking dumb. And then I opened the planning document, saw that it looks like OhioCon, like a Japanese word. And I'm like, oh, it's like an obscure anime or something. And then I clicked the article and no, it's an Ohio anime convention. So they're spelling it that way intentionally. And it is Ohio.
Yes.
So fuck this shit.
Wow. Fuck
Ohio. I think the Japanese pronunciation is Ohio.
Yeah.
Not Ohio.
It's a pun. I know, but like it looks like.
Yeah, it's a play on words. It's a play on words. I think it's funny.
Hey,
no, I'm saying fuck this shit, as in the convention. That's bullshit. Fuck this.
Well, the short of it is that it's not happening, so you get
what. Yay. Yeah. Nor should it. You can't just do. I don't even know what the Japanese version of Wisconsin would be. Like it. I don't know. I can't even do it. Fuck that, though. You can't do it. California anime? Nope.
Yeah. You know what? You know what, OhioCon? You can't do that. You can't name it that. You also can't use the Red Cross logo in your logo. That's a war crime.
Yeah.
That's against the Geneva Conventions, if you read the article.
If there's a Japanese anime company that decides to make an anime set in fucking Columbus, Ohio, then sure. But otherwise, no, you don't get that, Ohio. That's not for you.
I'm trying to think if they ever go to Ohio in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. No. Okay, they travel through it, but we are blessed with the miracle of not seeing Ohio in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. We see Milwaukee, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there an extended period of JoJo's where they're traveling around the United States?
They do a cross-continental race. In that part, there's briefly a stretch where two of the main characters are the richest people in Milwaukee and are having a terrible time.
Because, like, Japanese people don't know anything about Milwaukee, so they're saying, let's pick an obscure city and, like, make it a kind of, like, weird reference. How many people in Japan do you think are aware of the existence of a city called Milwaukee? Because, like, as someone who doesn't spend much time thinking about Japan, I know that, like, I probably know about 3 or 4 cities and beyond. And maybe that's just because America is so fucking, like, centered on itself. But, like, I definitely would not be able to name Japan's equivalent of Milwaukee. So I'm curious what percent are even, like, aware that it's a city that exists and is real. Because it's what? It's like number 19 in the U.S.? Or is it even that high?
So my only thought is that how big is the NBA in Japan?
Milwaukee Bucks. True.
Yeah.
Milwaukee Brewers.
I feel like if the reason you know it is because of sports, like...
That counts.
It counts, but...
If you don't know anything about the city, sure, it taints it a little bit, but... Hey, I think that's how a lot of people are introduced to cities in general. Okay, Milwaukee is the 31st biggest city in the United States.
Higher than I thought.
Japanese. Well, I thought it was 19, so I'm way off.
Yeah.
By population, let's get to number 31 and see if any of us have heard about it. Oh, the 10. God damn it.
Give us like a range of like 5 to see.
No, it's got to be 31 on the top.
Specifically, what if we've heard of number 32 or 30?
Oh, fuck. God damn it.
Do you know it?
31st biggest city in Japan, Nagasaki.
Oh.
Jesus Christ.
That actually like... Shock to me. that was a jump scare.
Milwaukee's Japan equivalent. Fucking Nagasaki. Jesus Christ. That was a jump scare.
Oh my god. What? Oh fuck.
Are you joking though? Like
no.
You need to cite your sources here because that's a stand-up bit, like what you just did. That's so bad, dude. Oh no.
Put some stuff in perspective. According to city mayors.
Okay, that's something. It's a website that exists.
Huh, Hiroshima is number 11.
Yeah.
Is that right? It's not a terrible comparison, too, because Nagasaki was targeted because it was somewhat remote and was like a big manufacturing hub.
Yeah.
So... Not Milwaukee, like...
Maybe Detroit.
Milwaukee definitely had a ton of manufacturing. Yeah, it wasn't like the heart of manufacturing, but I don't think Nagasaki was either, necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, so where's the shit? Did you link your sources? Okay, here we go.
Yeah, chat. Yeah.
You know,
why can I not find it?
Number 31.
Jesus Christ. And the surrounding cities, Matsudo, Himeji, Matsuyama, Kanazawa, like... Never in
not
my
a
life.
Chance,
but 31 on the dot. Jesus, man, that's so bad. That's so bad. Wow,
boy, that reframed some shit. Gotta rewatch Oppenheimer now.
They're not dissimilar in population either, by the way. Like, looking at the population, that is
less than 500,000, but that's not tiny,
within spitting distance.
Wow, Milwaukee really is America's Nagasaki.
God damn it. God fucking damn it, dude.
Hey, so what are you guys watching or playing or reading or shit?
I just watched Chinatown earlier today for the first time.
What'd you think of it?
I thought it was really good. I had heard that the ending is like very bleak and I didn't really know what people meant by that. And yeah, it is. It kind of just fucking ends and you're like, ooh.
Sorry, for clarity, this is a 1974 film?
Yep.
Ah, look at you. Look at you. Check it. That's a goal of mine. That was a tangible goal of mine this year that I want to watch like more old media, more like foundational media.
Yeah, I've tried to like focus the last few years on like just like seeing stuff that came out that year kind of because of the podcast list.
Right.
And I feel like I'm limiting myself. So I want to branch out.
Winter months. Great, great time for that.
Yeah, Jack Nicholson was great in that shit.
Like, what does he look like? Is he still
he looks like Jack Nicholson, but younger.
No.
Like he's got the high eyebrows. He's got the voice.
When
did The Shining come out? That was what, early 80s?
Yeah.
So it was like 82. A little younger than that. Like,
oh my god. Yeah, it's just it's him, but less like face sag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
It's weird. Jack Nicholson, but younger. Like, it's.
But like Jack Nicholson looks so much like Jack Nicholson that it's weird to. Huh. Yeah. All right. Guys, I hate to tell you this, but I enjoy the TED show on Peacock more than
wow.
I should. Yeah. Mm.
You got a Peacock subscription?
Maria and I were doing a 30 Rock rewatch, and I just kind of let it keep going.
Is that only on
Ted.
Peacock now?
Yeah.
Jesus. What have you taken from us, Universal?
The golden days of Netflix over. Although I think they have Seinfeld.
Fucking Seinfeld.
Yeah, I just watched an episode of Seinfeld on Netflix today.
Which one?
The one where, let's see, Jerry has the rental car. George is like parking all of the like neighborhood cars, like moving them around and causes like gridlock. And then Elaine is dating an old guy who has a stroke and Kramer is trying to act in a Woody Allen film. And then these pretzels are making me thirsty.
It's a classic.
No.
Jason Alexander, who's a very accomplished and very talented actor, playing a character
who can't act,
doing his absolute fucking best. It's impressive. Like it's hard to pull that off.
Wait, do you mean Max Powers? He played Kramer.
In the episode, like Kramer got a role in a Woody Allen film, and George is mad and was like trying to show that he could act.
Ah.
And failed.
I see.
These pretzels are making me thirsty. Just like terrible.
You don't know how long he's been at that bar. Maybe he's been there all day. He's depressed because he's got no job and he can't park these cars. He doesn't know what's going on. Those pretzels are making me thirsty.
I That is, God, I love that episode. I love that George bit. Well, I love every George bit, but that one especially, because that is such a men failing kind of thing. Like, every man thinks he could do that. Every man, oh yeah, I could totally move cars, right? I could park cars. I could switch from the side of the road. This could be my side hustle. And then faced with the actual logistics and stress of that and just grumbling. I love it. George, very well, well-written character.
Did you watch 30 Rock recently?
Yeah, like halfway through season 3.
Oh, damn. So you're not done yet. It's still
new. Might not ever be done. Petering out a little bit, especially with The Sopranos.
That always happens, or happened to me for 30 Rock. I started watching it like freshman year of college, and I don't think I finished it until like 2018, 2019. Like, it took me like 5 years to watch from beginning to end. I would always like fall off for like months and then come back to it, and always really enjoyed it. I just sometimes would stop watching and it never made any sense. And then at one point in like 2018, I just felt like I completely fell for it and watched, yeah, like 2.5 seasons and wrapped it up. But did you get to me and my coworker recently have just been quoting it like crazy. Did you get to Jackie Jormchomp?
No.
Oh God. I need to pull it up because it's the funniest fucking shit, dude. Like, Jenna gets into, or she's playing in a biopic because she's trying to win an award. She's playing Janis Joplin, but halfway through they lose the rights to the story, so it becomes about Jackie Jormchomp.
No, so they. I saw the like episode that sets a lot of this up. In the first episode, she's set to play Janis Joplin, but then they lose the rights. They get outbid. So then it's like playing Janis Joplin.
Yeah.
And then later
it becomes Jackie Jormchomp. And I see it's season 3, episode 18. So they were setting up for an episode that I don't think you've seen yet. That is, oh, dude, it's fucking amazing. Like, it is the funniest shit ever. Like, all the songs are just like slightly altered versions of Janis Joplin's song. Dude, that show's really fucking funny. I know that there's parts that probably didn't age all that well because it's aughts comedy, but man.
No, there is the amount of casual transphobia in early 30 Rock, at least, is
kind of every show back then.
Yeah, every comedy show. Yeah.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah, if it was a like de jure show or movie, like if it was like of the culture, then it's just straight up homophobia. If it's like kind of a progressive pushing the boundaries show, then it's transphobia. Like they've moved past homophobia and are to transphobia, and one day they might actually just stop. But
it is also 30 Rock is also aged really in a really interesting way, because a lot of the stuff that Liz deals with as like a high profile woman working in entertainment, working in a public position, a lot of the things she has to deal with still super relevant, but also she has just become the most neoliberal cutout as time has gone on, in a way that also ages really interestingly with public perception of Tina Fey and some of her humor. And also, I won't pop off too much about The Sopranos, because everyone knows The Sopranos is good. Go watch The Sopranos, everyone. An under-discussed part of how good it is, the dream sequences in The Sopranos are a cut above it. They're weird and unsettling and surreal in a way that you don't think like a pretty grounded piece of media like The Sopranos is going to be. But then, I don't know, I just watched the season 2 finale and there's a dream sequence where they just strapped a dildo underneath James Gandolfini's pants as he goes to his therapist's office, and it is hilarious. Yeah, good show.
Yeah. No, it is sometimes unsettling to be drastically jerked from this hyper-grounded mob, like blue-collar fucking violent show to like just straight fantasy.
Yeah.
Straight up fantasy.
He learns one of his best friends is on the take from the feds because a talking fish in his dream tells him.
Hey, things come to you with mysterious ways. I don't know.
Ryan, you got anything new you're checking out, or puppy prep taking up a lot of the bandwidth?
Yeah, definitely a lot of puppy prep going on. I'm going to be welcoming Mochi, the mini Australian Shepherd, in about a week and a half here. And going to be having a blast hanging out. So yeah, then probably even less. But
yeah.
No, I've been trying to watch like movies and TV shows, but similar to Andrew, I'm like, I kind of want like stuff from 2024. And hasn't been much lately.
No, I really want Severance to come back. Like that was a good, like, you know, have like capturing cultural moment, everyone watching the shows. Yeah. As much as we did when Game of Thrones is on, and Severance is about as close as it comes to that, I feel.
It's not going out until 2025.
When was the last time all three of us watched the same show at the same time?
Rick and Morty, kind of, but not really.
Yeah, Rick and Morty, we never really lined up.
No.
We'll watch House of the Dragon, season two.
Yeah.
There's never been a show that everyone watched and got to comment on as a culture since Game of Thrones. Well, there was that one time they made a show in the same universe.
There was the one time where they made Game of Thrones again, but good. Like, and we all had the opportunity to watch it. And
there was that one, but
hey, speaking of disappointment, that Packer game. Kind of knew it was coming, but still.
Not disappointed at all, baby.
Nah, yeah.
I'm riding high. I don't care.
Definitely disappointed in the moment. Like,
nope.
Like, you know, we shouldn't have been there. You know, implications going into the next season are great. I feel good. But, like, yeah, like, we gave that game away. Like, we absolutely, like, played better than the other team, should have put it away and didn't. Like, we lost a very close game that, you know, we gave away the opportunity to go to the NFC Championship and play the Lions, which would have been fucking cool. Like that, it sucks. But you know what? Like, I'm not going to eat myself alive for it.
Also, like, unless you got a team in the game still, and unless you got a team in the game still, be rooting for the Lions right now, okay? Like, they are America's team.
Yeah, the prospect Lions of having a, like, Chiefs 49ers Super Bowl is just gut wrenching.
Nope. Ravens Lions all the way.
Yep.
But no, I don't know if I said it during our Zoom call or afterwards, but no, there was literally not a single point in that 49ers game where I thought we were going to win the game. We never extended the lead to like a far enough distance. Like when we were up 20-0 against the Cowboys, I didn't think we were going to win yet. I think after the pick six, when we went up 27-0 was when I was like, oh, I think we're going to win. Like, but against the Niners, there was literally not a single point where I was like, we're going to win. I was always like, we're just not putting it away. Like, this isn't enough. And so I guess I never really got truly disappointed because I was always like, I don't know if we got this. And we didn't. And that's okay because we got so many more years, baby.
Hey, I promise I'm not.
There you go.
I promise I'm not a butthurt in asking this question. I'm just genuinely curious because I'm seeing discourse and y'all are more informed than I am on this. Is Brock Purdy a system QB?
It's impossible to tell.
Like, I mean, it's...
Well, that...
I feel like it's one of those things where, like, almost every QB is a system QB. Like, football is a team sport. Like Brock Purdy... is like, yeah, he's executing a very good offense that has been successful before him and has like an incredible amount of playmakers, but also he's doing a lot better than the other guys that were on that team before him. he's doing better than Jimmy Garoppolo did with the same people. He's doing better than Trey Lance did in a very small sample.
Trey Lance, you know, famous Dallas Cowboys third stringer.
Yeah, Like, he is a good quarterback. He is, like, because, you know, it's not like I could go in there and just win with the San Francisco offense. Like, people kind of like to act like because the rest of the team is also good, that means that he automatically isn't. He's fucking doing everything. Like, maybe not last game. He didn't have a great game.
I was going to say, he had a pretty bad game.
Yeah, but for the most part, like, this season and the end of last season, he's been doing everything right. Like, he's done a good job. Like, would you rather have Brock Purdy or Josh Allen? Like, it's not a fucking question. Like, obviously, Brock Purdy is not as good as some of the elite tier quarterbacks in the NFL, but he's good. He is.
But you will admit that the floor of a quarterback that could succeed in the 49ers system is pretty fucking low. Like, there are a lot of backups that could step into that role and be serviceable and be above replacement level to the point where people would think,
yeah, he's
maybe we should give him a job.
He's being elevated by that team for sure. But like, in order to like be elevated that high, like to like, there's no way that he could actually be a shit quarterback that is being buoyed by this amazing team. He's been too good for that.
I don't know if shit is I don't think system quarterback necessarily implies shit. I feel like system quarterback generally implies like average and being placed onto a pedestal.
I mean, like, the big thing about Jared Goff is that he was a system quarterback, and he was, but like, he's been doing really fucking good outside of that system. Like, he left that system and was still good with the Lions, probably even better. So like, does that mean he wasn't actually a system QB? Or does, like, if you're a system QB, can you operate any system? Doesn't that mean you're not a system QB?
Well, but it's what we saw with Geno Smith. Like, Jared Goff got older and more mature and learned a lot. Like, young Jared Goff could very well have been not a very good quarterback in a good system and was elevated because of that. And then he progressed because he was in that system for a long time, learned a lot, went to Detroit and was actually able to succeed, even though the system wasn't like perfectly set up for him to succeed because he got enough time learning and maturing and growing and getting better at football. So, that's why I just think it's hard to tell. I don't want to say definitively Brock Purdy equals system quarterback or
right.
Brock Purdy equals elite. Like, I don't think either of those. Nah.
I think he's probably like a mid-level starting NFL quarterback. Like, if you take him out of the 49ers, like, I'm sure he wouldn't be as good. But I do not think that he would like flounder on a different team.
Bear.
There's been too many quarterbacks that have been drafted highly that have completely flamed out. For him to be doing this well and it be of no volition of his own.
And that's like the tricky thing about quarterbacks too, right? Like, they are so publicly facing, they are so instrumental to a team that teams will keep like a mediocre or like maybe even kind of bad quarterback because, hey, at least we know what we're working with here. Like, we get some other guy in and it's a complete crapshoot. And so often teams fall back on the devil they know.
Yep.
That being said, I have no idea what happens to Justin Fields this year, where he ends up, if anywhere.
I mean, he'll end up somewhere. Like,
send him to fucking San Francisco. I'd be fucking curious. Like, I want to see a thing here. Like, let's do it.
Stafford 2.0. Let's do it.
If
who knows?
Fucking Stafford was a really good QB that was being weighed down by the rest of the team, and everyone kind of knew it. That Stafford was fucking lighting shit up, and Detroit still just couldn't really do anything. That's why he wanted to leave. Everybody knew that he was good and was like, you know, kind of needed to get out of Detroit. It's kind of the opposite of Brock Purdy.
The anti-Brock Purdy. Thank you all so much for listening to Voluntary Viewing episode 242, which will almost certainly be titled Rebuild of Podcast. If you'd like what you heard, like, comment, subscribe, etc. Check us out Instagram, YouTube, TikTok for highlight clips. Actual link in the description. Support us on Patreon. Join the likes of Tiffany Cole and Sucky Badger. Follow us on Twitter at V2_podcast. Send us questions, voluntaryviewing@gmail.com. Follow me. I'm Blue Sky. I'm Lucas DeRuyter there. Don't follow me on Twitter anymore. Get off of Twitter. You need to get off and you're cool. I can get you a Blue Sky code. Outside of that, thank you so much for listening and have a great week.